This is Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? Hey, welcome to Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? I'm Molly Stillman, and this is a podcast where I sit down with a different guest each week and have raw, funny, often brutally honest conversations about the things that matter most: faith, business, life, and everything in between. Where we each learn how to be good stewards of the things we've been entrusted with, even our stories, and how we can use those things to serve others and leave our families, our friendships, and our communities a little better than we found them. I want to create a space where people are unafraid to be themselves and unafraid to ask the questions the rest of us are thinking. My goal is to make you laugh, cry, and laugh till you cry. I have a fantastic and such a fun guest this week, and that is my good friend, Bola Shakunbi. Bola is a certified financial education instructor, finance expert, four-time best-selling author of the book Choosing to Prosper and the three-part Clever Girl Finance book series. She's a speaker and the founder of Clever Girl Finance, one of the largest personal finance media and education platforms for women in the U.S. Bola is also the recipient of the 2021 Financial Education Instructor of the Year Award from the National Council of Financial Educators. She's been featured in Time Magazine, Money Magazine, CNBC, Forbes, Fast Company, Essence, Black Enterprise, ABC News, Good Morning America. I mean, she is all over the place. Now, I had Bola on my podcast. I think we did the math something like 6 years ago. So it has been a long time. She has been become just a dear friend. I actually got featured in one of her first books, Clever Girl Finance. I have one of my stories is in there. And she was so kind as to endorse my book, which comes out this month. And so it was just the perfect time to have her back on the show. I'm so excited about this conversation. Before I get into my chat with Bola, I just wanted to say we are in March and I could not be more pumped and feeling excited and hopeful and grateful because my first book releases this month. It's called If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry: How Death, Debt, and Comedy Led to a Life of Faith, Farming, and Forgetting What I Came Into This Room For. And if you have not already had a chance to pre-order the book, would you go and wherever your books are sold, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, wherever you can buy a book online, you can get this book. So would you pre-order my book, If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry? It would mean the world to me. It releases March 26th. I cannot wait for you to have it in your hands. Would you go check it out? I know that you're going to laugh, you're going to cry, and you're going to laugh till you cry. All right. Well, without further ado, on to my chat with Bola Shakunbi. It is a very exciting day, everyone, because my friend Bola Shakunbi is back on the show. Yay. Bola, welcome. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm excited to chat with you, Molly.
Okay. So before we hit record, I had to go and look. You were on episode 57, and we are quickly approaching episode 400. Wow. So if we do the math, you were on like 7 years ago, which is kind of wild that somehow wow. I'm still here, you're still here, but we're still friends. And so this is great. This is also, Bola, you didn't know I was going to talk about this, but you are now entering a very coveted club. And that is people who have been on the show more than once.
Oh, okay.
So you are now part of the Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder Two Timers Club. So we have imaginary velvet jackets that we hand out. So you just have to imagine that I'm handing you this really beautiful velvet jacket. I think yours is like a crushed green color. Okay. I think green would probably looks really beautiful on you. And so we're going with like a deep green color in your imaginary velvet okay. jacket. And then it has like a really fun patch of my face on it.
Okay, Molly.
I know. So I started this joke a couple of years ago because I had never, like, it had been years before I'd ever like had a repeat guest on. And the first time I ever had somebody on twice, I was like, I really need to make this like a coveted club, like the yes. SNL Five Timers Club. And so now it's this Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder Two Timers Club. And
I'm honored to be part of this club.
Yes. We're going to kick off. I'm just so happy to have you back. And there is so much to update people on. And if you do, since it's been a while, like 6-7 years since you've been on the show, I'm going to have you give the BOLA 201. So instead of the BOLA 101, the BOLA 201. So for people that don't know you, who are you, what you do, but then kind of, you know, what's going on in your life right now?
Okay, I'm not sure I remember what my 101 was.
All right, we're all very different people today than we were 6-7 years ago, so it's okay. You know, just who are you, what you do, and who you are now.
So I'm Bola Shokumbi. I am the founder of a company called Cleverell Finance. We're a financial empowerment platform for women. We're all about helping women live life on their own terms by getting empowered with knowledge. I am an author. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. and that's pretty much what I have going on. My business, my kids.
Yes.
My house.
You know, just a few things. So since you last came on this show, you have released not one, not two, not three BOLA, but 4 books. Holy smokes. Just a few weeks ago, you were on live with Kelly and Mark, No Big Deal. So, you know, it's amazing because I remember when I had you on back, you know, in a decade and a half ago, that's what it feels like, had started Clever Girl Finance, and that was the whole reason I'd had you on. But it has grown so much in that time. And so I would love for you to just kind of share a little bit of the Clever Girl Finance journey. Mm-hmm. Because really, when you came on, I mean, you'd only been doing it for a pretty short time.
Yeah, because it's 8 years old now. So if I was on 7 years ago, I probably hadn't even quit my full-time job at that time.
Yeah, I don't think you had.
I need to go back and listen to that episode. But
I know. I would love for you to just kind of share what the journey has been like. And, you know, I love your heart and mission for Clever Girl Finance to help women in their financial journeys. But clearly it became so much bigger than you pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. So tell us that journey and how it has evolved over the years to being, you know, probably much more than what you had even originally envisioned.
Yeah. Well, I'll come back to that last point that you made.
Yeah.
But when I started Clever Girl Finance, it was literally just me, myself, and I. It was something that I started when my twins were the newborns. I was thinking about it, thinking about what it was going to be, what this business was going to be. And around 13 months, I came up with the idea. My kids were 13 months old, of starting Clever Girl Finance. And it was just really me starting out talking about my personal journey with money. And then next step was highlighting the journeys of other women. I think that's how we met. Who I think I featured you on the blog. So highlighting the journeys of other women who were doing stuff with their business, with their finances, and just creating a diverse point of view. Because I was when I started my business, I didn't know anybody else in the space. And I didn't see anybody who looked like me or who focused on women. It was a lot of bro culture finance. It was people yelling at you on TV, and it was just nothing personable or it's okay to make mistakes type of thing, or you know. So when I started, it was just me, and it was a blog. I was working full time, and but I had an idea that I wanted to build a business that would help women, that would empower women to not feel any shame or any judgment about their finances. Because one of the things I realized was that women felt very embarrassed about what they didn't know, even though it was not a reflection of how smart they were. It was not a reflection of, you know, who they were as individuals. It just meant they didn't have the information. So that's how I started Clever Girl Finance. It was me up late at night after I put my kids to bed, up till 1, 2 a.m., going to bed, wake up at 4 a.m. before I had to wake up my kids at 6 a.m. to get ready for daycare, and then me going to my full-time job. It was working on my lunch break or whenever I caught a moment at work. that I shouldn't have been doing to work on this business. And it sort of evolved from there. And I think what really pushed Clever Girl Finance was just the, I would say, incessant creation of content.
Yeah.
And just creating content on the site, content on social media, creating content without really even having any idea of at the time what SEO meant, without really having any sort of like, oh, you know, should I have a podcast? Should I do this? Like it was just creating content as much as possible and having a voice out there and putting it out there. So it really started with the blog and then with Instagram. And the podcast got added on later. It just was attractive to women because it was like, wow, you're not shaming me. You're not judging me. This isn't like a bros club. I'm relating to the other women you're featuring. I love the quotes. I love that we can laugh about our finances, which is, you know, just like you. I'm like, if you can't laugh about mistakes you've made in money, listen, you will dig a pit and cry into it all day long.
Yeah, you'll be crying all the way to the bank. Yeah,
exactly. So that's really where how the business evolved. And over time, the content kind of like helped as an amplification tool where people would search for things and find Cleverwell Finance. And then, you know, I would do a podcast, I would do an interview, an Instagram live, I would, you know, the women who I was featuring would cheer. And it kind of just became this, its own little, I guess, snowball rolling around.
Yeah.
Gaining traction. One of the things that I had written down when I started my business was I wanted to build a business of impact at scale. I didn't know what that really meant. I didn't know how to get there. I just knew that I was going to do what I was going to do.
Yeah.
To try to help women. And there's one statement that somebody made to me, I think it was one of my mentors who said, because I was at the time when I was struggling about what is the point of doing all this work and like staying up late and like being so tired and working 7 days a week. Because at the time I also had a photography business and I had a online retail business. I was hustling.
You were hustling.
And I was like, what is the point of this Cleverwell Finance? Like, the people even care. And they said to me, listen, it's not about, stop thinking about the volume of people. Think about each individual person that you help. Think about the one set of eyeballs that reads that article and helps them create a budget, helps them create a financial plan, it helps them adjust their money mindset and not feel so shameful. Think about that individual. And so once I started looking at it from an individual's perspective, like how I felt every time I've been helped or supported by a tool or a resource, it became more meaningful. Because when you think about people as a big mass, it's just a mass of people. You can't really tell the emotions. You can't really tell the feelings. You can't really tell the impact. But when you look at it from an individual perspective, how is this helping this one person? And you see how dramatic that change is for that one person. It makes all the difference. And so that's really what kept me going, thinking about the individual people that the business was helping. And over time, it was hiring, you know, a writer, hiring a virtual assistant, figuring out how to monetize the business, hiring another writer, hiring a developer. And it just sort of grew like that. The experience of the journey, I will say, was hard. It was very hard. It was like blood and tears.
Yes.
It was blood and tears hard. It was, oh God, some of those sleepless nights, like the next morning trying to stay up and functional was very, very painful. But it has been worth it. I don't have any regrets about pursuing my own business. So yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but kind of like.
You did. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and I think that speaks to any entrepreneur's journey in general is like, maybe there is someone out there who would say that they disagree, but I don't think that there is a single business owner out there who would say, oh yeah, entrepreneurship, it is cakewalk. It is just
easy. I want to meet those people.
I would love to meet someone who has that perspective. But yes, you know, you really were hustling. You were just doing all of the things. But I feel like, I mean, just in watching your journey kind of from afar and having known you kind of before it really became what it is now, what was the turning point where you realized, oh, this is like really something? And like, was it when you realized like, oh, I got a book deal and like we're moving in that direction? Was that kind of the turning point for you? Because, and then I remember the first time I saw your book in Target and I was like, yes, Bola in Target. Yes. And then I live vicariously because I'm in your first book.
Yes, you are.
My stories in your first book. And so I was like, so there I am also in Target. So It's not about me, but it is my dream to have my book in Target. And so, but you know, I, you know, I was so proud of you. I was like such a proud friend from afar that we've never even met in person, but have just, you know, followed each other and connected on social media over the years. But was the book the turning point for you, or was there a different turning point that really when you started, I know that you started to hire and things like that, but was this a, when you realized that this was like, this had legs, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it wasn't the book that was a turning point. I mean, in fact, like I look at my books as they're a little bit surreal, and I look at them kind of as like just helpers. They help the mission. Yeah. And I also can't believe I've written 4 books. I'm like, what was I doing? I must have blacked out as I was churning these books out.
Amazing.
But the turning point for me was because the audience around 2018 had been growing steadily. So this business was started in August of 20. Well, the idea, the like, let's click and create a www dot was started August 2015, August 10th. That's my friend's birthday. She's like, if you don't just get over yourself and start this website, this business. It. So it was on her birthday, and then it started evolving the next year. So I think I quit my job in 2017. Ish, early 2018. Yeah. And the audience had been growing steadily. We were starting to have a following. I had just started the podcast. And I had started talking to people who were now advisors about what I was doing, about this idea that I had. And one of my advisors was like, you should apply to Techstars New York City. And Techstars is an accelerator. It's a program for companies that are trying to scale in tech or with impact. And so I applied to this thing, and it was like, oh, it's closing in 2 days, just apply. And I was like, no one's going to care about this little personal finance business out of New Jersey. The solo founder, you know, because I had looked at other companies that had gone through Techstars and Airbnb. I was like, oh, wow, sure. I'll just apply. Alongside Airbnb and Uber, like whatever.
Casually, love it.
So I did the application and everything. And I was called to do an interview on Zoom with one of the partners and then come into the office. And sitting in the office, they had all these ideas for what they thought my business could be, which I didn't quite agree with. But I saw the potential because they were talking about how, you know, these are people who sat with founders of other big companies. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about how it could be this and it could be that. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm onto something here. Like, I wasn't sure before, but the fact that I now have a seat at this table with these people who are recognizing what I do and its potential, I do have something. And so I went into this program. It's all about helping you scale. They give you seed funding. And then the aim is to go out and raise venture capital. And I had, you know, the venture capital space is very interesting. And I was like, okay, you know what? I don't really agree with the angle these people want me to take with my business. But two things that I had learned was that, one, I'm never going to give up control of my business. And two, I'm going to pursue what I think feels right to me. And so I remember going on these interviews, and I did 90 investor interviews over like a 3-week period.
Oh my goodness.
And it was so biased. It was all the reasons why I started my business to begin with. I met with an investor who said, my wife is a CFO and she doesn't care about her finances. And I'm like, that's the lie, but okay, sure. I met with someone who said, oh, what does your husband think about what you're doing? Oh, you have kids, you can't build a successful business. They fed into all the stereotypes that intimidated women about money. And I was like, there's a reason why I'm here. And it was all kinds of like, all comments about me and who I was and my skin color and my race and my demographic and like, you know, other than, you know what, Bola, I acknowledge that women are smart. I acknowledge that women can be successful with their finances. Nobody would acknowledge that. And so I decided that I was not going to pursue raising venture capital. Instead, I was going to build the business that I wanted on my own terms. Mm. And that's what I went ahead and did. So that was a turning point, was one, to prove those naysayers wrong, because there was even an investor from a, I will not mention any names, but from a venture capital firm that is supposed to be pro-minority and focus on investing in Black women. And they said, this is too much. You need to dumb it down a little bit so Black women can understand this. I was like, excuse me? Say that again? Oh. You know, Black women don't use computers like that. I said, come again? And I actually went and I took offense to that, and I said exactly what I felt. But I also reminded myself, WWJD.
Oh my gosh.
So I killed them with kindness too. But yeah, so my goal, that was a turning point to like, you know what? I'm going to prove all these people wrong. I'm going to prove that women are smart. I'm going to prove that women of color are smart. We are good with money. Yes. Studies show that we are excellent with our finances. Once we have that education, once we have that confidence, and that's exactly what I went ahead and have been doing since.
Yes, Bola. Oh my gosh. Well, one, I just want to jump through the computer and find that person and punch them for you.
I know.
I've never punched a person ever, but you know, there's a little bit of the inside of me that like maybe if I was like, right, but WWJD. That is unbelievable. But I think just in hearing you share that story, just in a lot of ways, I'm so proud of you for getting that experienced and then knowing and being confident in what you were created to do. Hmm. And to know that like, no, I don't need these, you know, stuffy people with their big wallets and their like too tight ties and pants. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need them. Like, I'm going to build the business that I, and here you are 4 books later and, you know, on national television and a successful podcast, and you're helping thousands, you know, millions of women. And so I'm just, wow, amazing. What a powerful, powerful story. Well, okay. So let's kind of bring it to today. I mean, one, like I said, I just saw you on live with Kelly and Mark a couple of weeks ago. You were doing a segment on kind of helping kids and their parenting and finances at the beginning of the year. That is so cool. How did that come about?
So that's actually my 5th time on the show.
Awesome.
That's so awesome. I've been, I guess I could call myself a friend of the show now.
Yeah, you are. Yes,
I've gone on there once or twice a year for the last, I guess, 3-ish years. And they just reached out. They looked up content and they found Clever Girl of Finance. They're like, oh, well, who's behind Clever Girl of Finance? Oh, do you have time to come on the show and do a segment with, I think my first show was with Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah, with Kelly
and
Ryan.
And I went there and I've done a few TV shows and that is by far my favorite one because they just feel like a family.
Yeah.
It's not anything you would think. They're laughing, they're having fun. Kelly's talking to you, Mark is talking to you. They're like asking about your kids. Like,
yeah.
This past time I went, she's like, hey, Bola, so good to see you again. And I was going to shake her hand and she's like, no. And she gives me a hug. I'm like, oh, you remember me. I've only, because, you know, sometimes like, they're on the show every single day. You don't know who they remember. And so that experience has been really awesome. I don't like doing TV. I am an introvert by nature, but it's just a good experience. And it helps to promote the mission of my business to more people because more people get to know about Clever Girl Finance and they look us up and they see what we're doing.
Yeah.
And they share it. And so I love that.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, let's get into some practical stuff because obviously we know I was just thinking about this, you know, I love your story and I love where your passion has come from and to see and watch you grow and to see your success. But you were talking, I was thinking about the person that, you know, is on the other end of, you know, they're listening to this or they're watching this on YouTube. And, you know, this is airing kind of in the first part of the year. And, you know, I always say I am not the originator of this. Okay. But there's nothing magical about January 1st. one of the things that, my family and I do, we've done it for a couple of years now is we started every March, we do something called Low Dough March. And so what we do is we spend as little as possible in the month of March. And, everything from like, we don't go out to eat unless we have a gift card. We are really, really frugal in, you know, what we're spending on groceries and only buying what we absolutely need. Like that's not the month you go to Costco and you load up the snacks for the pantry. You do that in the month before. We're not just like randomly going on Amazon and like being like, oh, I need this thing, like, you know, and just buying it. Cause you know, depending on where you are in your financial journey, I mean, I've shared my story here on my own podcast. I've shared it on yours, you know. I was in debt for a really long time. And so my life was low dough March for a very long time. But even now, you know, we are by no means wealthy or bathing in money or anything like that. But, you know, my husband and I, we're well into our careers. We have two kids and we have a farm. And so, yeah, we do well financially. I mean, we're, you know, we're comfortable. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like we always have, you know, very early on, we're really, really passionate about being good stewards of our finances. I mean, my husband is a financial advisor. So, you know, that's his whole life has been being a good steward. He's never been in debt. You know, he bought his first house when he was 24 or whatever, but 20% down. Like, you know, he's always been good with money. And that was not my story. And so, you know, we started implementing this low-do March a couple of years ago, because what we wanted to do is we wanted to have 1 month throughout the year that became a reset for our family financially. And because especially, in, you know, and I'm kind of speaking to whether you are in you're listening to this and you're in debt currently, or you're in a debt-free journey currently, or if you're maybe on the other side of a debt-free journey and maybe you are a little bit more comfortable in your finances, or if you are listening and you're just like wealthy and you know you are, and that's okay. That's, I think also I could have a whole conversation about like how we demonize wealth when we almost like, we don't want to be broke, but then we almost like idolize being broke because it's better to be broke than be wealthy and be a good steward with your money. Anyway.
That's a whole
conversation. Maybe we can have that conversation in a few minutes. But for right now, you know, wherever you are in your journey, the reality is like we all end up falling into patterns of spending. And so breaking kind of that pattern and realizing maybe what has become an unhealthy habit. Like I will fully admit there have been times where I've been like, it's just easier to go on Amazon and just buy the thing that I need rather than being thoughtful about like, do I have something that actually already fills this whatever, or can I go to a thrift store and find a version of it? Or, you know what I mean? Like it can just be easy in today's day and age when everything is online, everything is just like, you know, DoorDash, you know, Grubhub, you know, curbside pickup, like everything is easy. And so it becomes easier to spend money. Anyway, I tell you all of this, that, you know, our low-do March is as we're recording this, it's coming up. So this is something that we've done in our own family. And then when we get to the end of the month and we look at, you know, how much we've ended up saving, we try to then do something good with that money that we've saved that, you know, we would have spent on Amazon or eating out or going to the movies or whatever it is, and, you know, make a donation or do something good with it or put it towards a project we're working on or whatever. And so I shared that story because I would love for you to, you know, especially in the work that you've been doing and how you've kind of come along alongside women over the last, you know, 8+ years, 9 years. What is something has been your approach to helping women in their own personal finance journey without shame, as far as like some practical tips for breaking some of those bad spending habits? Or like, what are some of the things that you have helped coach women through to really get their, you know, wherever they are, whether they're in debt or on the other side of debt or very wealthy, to get their finances really a little bit more under control.
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify, I don't do any one-on-one coaching. So I'm not hand-holding you, but I do like to say that we do, and myself and the other folks on my team, we do offer a level of coaching because we do live calls and we do like mentor calls and we do have these conversations. But because I'm not like facing individuals about their issues, I always share mine. It's like, okay, even if I don't have the opportunity to speak to you like one-on-one, maybe you can relate to where I'm coming from as a way to gain perspective and not feel embarrassed, because I'm a financial expert. That is a human being and still makes money mistakes, right? So example, my grocery shopping is ridiculous. I'm the person that I go into the grocery store and it doesn't matter how well I have prepared at the door of the store. It doesn't matter if I only have cash. It doesn't matter if I have a list. It doesn't matter if I only give myself 15 minutes. It's like I get to the door of the ShopRite or the wherever I'm going and I just lose my mind. And so I go into the store and I deviate from my list. I buy what's not necessary. I buy things I know nobody's going to eat in my house. Nobody wants this stuff. I buy things like, oh, want to try this? I'm like, oh, that looks great. I buy things I just saw on Instagram. I'm that girl. And so my grocery bill was just always out of hand. And it was always stuff that my family, my husband and my son are both super picky eaters. My daughter will eat whatever you give her. So it's not like anybody had all these massive requests. Like, they all ate the same thing all day long. And I'm here buying stuff nobody wants. That ends up going in either the food bin at back of the grocery store, the donation bin, the kids' donation bin in school, or unfortunately in the trash. And so I had to think about, how can I help myself help myself? So that's one scenario. The other scenario is working. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm constantly, like, I have very little time for myself. I'm a mom to twins. Even though I work for myself, people think I have all the time in the world. But because I own my own business, one of the things that I wanted to do was to be present for my kids. So I take them to school. I pick them up. I'm present at all the school events. I take them to all the after-school activities. I'm running this business. I have to take care of my household. I have very little time for myself. And so I go through phases of, like, oh my God, all I'm doing is working. And I'm right here on my computer. And for 2 minutes, I can just browse Nordstrom and add a bunch of stuff to my cart real quick and then check out real quick. It's so easy and so convenient, right? And I can just, like, buy things I know I don't need. I mean, I'll wear the dress because I do a lot of, like, videos and events and stuff like that. But do I need it? I can remix something in my closet very, very easily. So second scenario. And so one thing I always like to tell people that ask me questions is, like, remind yourself that you're a human being, right? And sometimes it's more than just self-discipline, right? Because the self-discipline is like, oh, you don't do this, don't do that. But sometimes it's also tied to the emotions or feelings. Like, for me, example, it's like, I feel overwhelmed by work. I don't have enough time for myself. It's not that I can't be self-disciplined, but I just want to do something for me in this instance. Or in the grocery store, it could be a case of self-discipline. And not being such a nuisance when I get there.
Yeah.
And respecting myself. Like, literally, I'm the girl in the store that will pick up the hand cart and I'll be like, you know what? I'm only going to buy two things. And I'll take my hand cart and then I'll have a full hand cart. I have things in my pockets. I have a bottle under my arm. And then I'm like, do you want me to get your cart? No, no, no. I'm only getting two things. But I have like 30 things. That's me.
This is so relatable because I.
That is me.
Same thing. So Costco. Costco is where I go to die because I will go in with my Costco list for like three things. And then somehow I'm walking out and I'm like, how did I just spend $400 at Costco? Like, why is my bill $400?
Exactly.
I'm like, but I only bought three things, but it is $400. Yep. Like, what?
So, exactly. So I always say, how can I help myself help myself, right? Think about it from your perspective. So for me, it's putting time limits on my phone for Nordstrom.com so that, or whatever sites I shop at, so that, you know what? I've been on here for 5 minutes. Your time has expired. No more time to shop, Bola. Go do something. Go read a book. Go watch some TV. You don't need to be buying trash on here. I stopped going to the grocery store in person as much as possible, which means I shop online and I stick to my list. I haven't been into Target since last October.
Wow.
And now it is. And if I do, haven't been inside, I would do like pickup, but it's specific to what I wanted to buy. And the few times I've had to run into my local shop, right, to pick up two things, I've come out with 30, but I know that, listen, to stick to my list, I need to shop online because I can find the coupons. I pick exactly what I need in my grocery cart. The delivery is $14.95, but if I was in the store, I would spend much more than $14.95, right? And so can you automate your savings so that, and have it put into a new account when you get paid? As soon as you get paid, that way you're not just spending money because you see money sitting in your bank account. Can you automate investments? Can you automate paying your bills if you find that you're paying your bills late? Can you spend less time with certain people if you find that these are the individuals who are derailing your finances? Can you, if you're driving by a bakery every day and that bakery is causing you to spend $50 for breakfast every day, can you take another route or buy some of the things that you like from the bakery and have them at home so you can take them, in bits and pieces throughout the week versus buying a $50 bunch of stuff and then leaving it in the kitchen for everybody else to eat because you can't eat it all. Right. So it's all about thinking about ways you can help yourself and allowing yourself to release yourself from that shame and that judgment. Because when you're shaming yourself and you're judging yourself, you're thinking of all the things that you cannot do and you're not allowing yourself to focus on what you can do. Sure, I'm horrible with my grocery budget. I always blow my grocery budget when I go into the store, but I can dwell on that and be upset with myself every time I go to the store. I can say, you know what, Bola, what can I do differently? I can shop online. There's a ShopRite app. There is a Target app. There is there's a Costco.com website I can shop on and have stuff delivered, right?
Yeah.
Or go pick up stuff and feel good about the fact that, you know what, this time I did well. There's this idea that if you can't do things all by yourself, like if I cannot be in the store and resist the grocery store, I'm not doing well. But I don't need to be in the store in the first place, right? There are people who will say things like, well, you're automating your finances because you're lazy. No, automation is a tool that can help you save, that can help you get out of debt faster, that can help you invest more.
Leverage
the tools and resources that can help you help yourself. You don't have to do it all yourself, right? So that's what I tell people. And give yourself that grace, right? We're all going to make money mistakes. I've made, listen, the grocery store and the Nordstrom.com are just two minor money mistakes I have made in my life.
Well, it's so relatable because it really is the thing that, like, every single month I'm just always like, how did I do this? But I love that tip. And honestly, I had never really given kind of conscious thought to the fact that, like, you know, some of that, those curbside pickup options actually do save you money in the end because you're not going in the store and you're getting sucked into, like, what was on the end caps or, you know, the things that they market to you in the store that weren't on your list. Whereas if you're shopping directly from your list, you're doing that curbside pickup, then you're saving money.
And when you're in the store, it's you versus the machine. Okay. Yes. There is a whole $1 billion machine that is working against you that has done studies on end caps, on aisle placements, on top shelf versus middle shelf versus bottom shelf, on the organization of the store. Like, I cannot win against a $1 billion machine.
You can't.
I could try to, but I won't win every time. I will walk past the new, what did I walk past this pissed me off so much because I knew I shouldn't have bought it. It was a new, like, Coke Zero flavor, but it was like a, what is it? Surprise. And it was supposed to be, it was called like Stargate or space star, something ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, I have no idea what you're talking about, but
it was like a concept. I think my store sometimes carries concept products. So it was a test. And of course, instead of it being like $3.99, it was like $7.99. I was like, oh my God, what is this concept? Coca-Cola Zero. And I bought it and it was utter trash. And my daughter was like, who would buy this? I was like, me, your mother. That is who.
This is so relatable, Boga. Like, I've totally done that before. So, okay, here's my moment of confession. So I am, I love, like, my weakness are the Little Debbie, like, Christmas tree cakes. Like, Little Debbie. Oh my gosh, Bola, you don't know Little Debbie Christmas
tree? No, I don't know what that is.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, people.
It sounds interesting, though.
They're delicious. They're like, you know what a zebra cake is?
No.
Oh my gosh, Bola, where have you been?
What's a zebra cake? Like, well, a pound cake with chocolate and vanilla?
The little Debbie, right? You know, Little Debbie. Like, it's like the cake. They have, like,
I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, Little Debbie. Okay. So, well, it's always like in the grocery store. It's always on its, like, own thing. Like, it's not in an aisle. It's always like Little Debbie has its own.
I've never seen this before, but now I bet you I'm going to see it.
Oh my gosh, this is hilarious.
I'm going to see this. The next time I'm going to the store anytime soon.
So, okay. So I love Little Debbie zebra cakes, but like the Christmas tree themed cakes. So like they come out usually like November 1st through Christmas. They're like, they're so unhealthy for you, but they're so delicious. Okay. I love a Little Debbie Christmas tree cake. All right. So it is, my husband laughs at me because, like, in general, like, I make pretty much everything from scratch. Like, we live on a farm, like, we eat very well around here. So, but I say life is about balance, and I also eat incredibly processed Little Debbie Christmas tree cakes. Well, so, you know, they're always, like I said, they're always on their own thing. And, well, like, they've expanded because the Christmas tree cakes are so popular. They've expanded to now, like, you can get Valentine's heart cakes. And they have, like, St. Patrick's Day cakes. And then they have, during the summer, they have, like, red, white, and blue cakes for July 4th.
Let me check my ShopRite app.
They have, like, little, like, leaves, you know, in the fall for ball or whatever. Well, so because they're all, like, supposed to be themed versions of,
my ShopRite app has this. I've never, ever seen these before.
Yes, Bola. Okay. So
continue.
There's, like, themed, you know, cakes. Well, the reality is that, like, they are not all as good as the Christmas tree cakes. And I have 100% like fallen victim to like, oh, they have like chocolate now, or like they have red velvet now. I should try that. And then I bring it home and I'm like, this is utter trash. Why did I spend all this money on it? And like, and on these cakes. And I, again, I realize it's very silly, but it's stuff like that, that when that, like when it's on its own cap and it's like the Shekinah glory is shining down on this highly processed red dye 40 high fructose
red dye 40 yellow three
cake, but that I'm sure has some sort of like a like crack or heroin inside of it. I'm just kidding. It doesn't, but it has some sort of like addictive ingredient.
Super cakes.
Okay. Also, pro tip: put them in the fridge for a little bit, and then you eat them a little cold. Ooh, yeah.
I'm not buying any of this. I'm not listening to you, Molly.
Bola's like
poison, it's poison. Caring.
I'm not eating this. Okay. Again, everyone listening, I need you to know that my life is about balance. I also eat a lot of salad. I make my own bread and my own bread products from scratch. I cook very. I make my own pasta. Everything. I also eat highly processed.
Oh, I drink Coke Zero. It's okay.
Yes. Oh, and I drink Diet Coke.
Warren Buffett is how old? 90-something years old.
He drinks Coke. Yeah, exactly. Okay, good. Warren Buffett, he drinks his what? It's like Diet Dr. Pepper or Dr. Pepper or whatever. Totally. It's fine. In any event. But yes, I love those tips. I also love that we each confessed and shared our weakness in the grocery store. So everyone listening on Instagram, I want you to share your weakness. You're going to all confess. What do you buy in the store that you know you shouldn't? Okay.
No shame, no judgment. We're not judging
you. No shame, no judgment. We're all here together. Okay. I love that. I love that tip. All right. I want to go back to something that we kind of both alluded to, and I would love your thoughts on this. I did not prepare you that we were going to ask this. I didn't know I was going to ask this. So okay. This is just an honest conversation. So the whole mentality around money in our culture, I have found, and I am not a psychologist. I don't know the ins and outs. I have my own personal theories that are not grounded in or based in fact or anything. But the way we almost demonize, it's like we have created a financial culture in which no one can win. In that, nobody wants to be broke. Nobody wants to be in debt because that is the worst. But also we demonize and weaponize wealthy people. Mm-hmm. And we say, oh, well, that person's just in, they're a one percenter and they have all the money and blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, we, as again, I say this, these are hasty generalizations, but as a culture, nobody wants to be broke either, but it's almost, cooler to be broke and have like a broke mentality than to be like, yeah, we have money and we do good things with it. And of course, we don't want to, like, there are gonna be people that on all ends of the spectrum that do bad things with a lot of money. But then there are also people who have a lot of money and do really good things. And we idolize wealth and, you know, it's in movies and television and music. And it's like, you know, we want money and we want more money and we're pursuing money. But then we also like, demonize the people who have it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm getting
yeah,
at?
Yeah, like, yeah.
And I'm curious, like, what your thoughts are on that as a culture. Like, why have we gotten to that place? And if you're like, I don't know, or you have your own thoughts. Again, this is just as we were talking, it just kind of occurred to me, and I was like, yeah, I would just. I'm as somebody who works in a personal finance space. Like, what kind of are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I've been demonized in many different ways. You know, there are people who have point blank said to me, you need to acknowledge your privilege. We're all privileged. We live in America, okay? Mm-hmm. I come from a third world country. I come from Nigeria, okay? You know, half of the, in fact, a tenth of the benefits you have here if you don't have a job, we don't have. There's nothing like that. It's a privilege to be born here, to live here, to have access, even if you live on the poverty line, to certain resources that a lot of other places don't have. Right. Also, I find it interesting when people say acknowledge your privilege or demonizing wealth when they have no idea where you're coming from. And I think sometimes it's because money is, the idea of money and being wealthy seems too hard, And so if you have it, then it's that limited mindset where they feel like if you have it, you have it, you may have taken from somebody else, right? There's not enough to go around, or you're just lucky because money is so hard, or you're privileged, you know, which is why you have money and I don't. And a lot of times that's just a misconception. If you look at today's world, and forget about the old money, like the whatever the old money names
Vanderbilt
are.
Okay,
those are
Kennedys, like, Vanderbilts.
How many Kennedys do you know, Molly? Okay, exactly. So,
side note, although it's funny because my daughter's 10 and my son's almost 8. And like we were talking about the presidential election. And of course, you know, just this is not a political thing, but I was talking about the candidates and I was like, it's probably going to be Trump. And I was like, but there's also RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is running it as an independent. And my daughter, who is 10, is like, how many Kennedys are there?
I know, right?
And I was like, even her at 10 is like, good gracious, so many Kennedys. Anyway, okay, back to what we were saying.
The point I'm making about these like old money people is that most of the wealthy people are not, like, there are studies that show that most of the wealthy people, truly wealthy people, didn't ever got a handout. They're self-made. They're people who had good fortune, who worked really hard, who got over challenges, but also fundamental commonality across all these people is that they did not have limited mindsets. Mm-hmm. I can hand you $1 million right now, and if you have a limited mindset, you're going to lose this money, and you're going to be mad that you lost it. You're going to be bitter and sad, and you're not going to do anything about it or anything smart to manage this money just because of the way you think, right? And so it's just shifting away from that limited mindset. There's enough money to go around for all of us. It takes hard work. You know, I think social media has made it seem like it's so easy to become an overnight sensation, or it's so easy for athletes and singers and actors and actresses and like marry a rich husband.
Yeah. Yep.
Listen, that is all like smoke and mirrors. Building wealth takes time. It takes patience. It is hard work. And there are people who do it. And there are people who do it at the expense of many things, right? Yeah. There are incredibly successful entrepreneurs that we see out there that have built wealth at the expense of family relationships.
Yeah.
Friendships, right? So it's very complex. But the bottom line is that you cannot have a limited mindset around wealth. Otherwise, you would never build it, and you always think that somebody out there is working against you, a system, a person, a thing working against you. And then because you're so focused on this limitation and all you don't have, and rich people are evil, money is evil, you don't see the opportunities when they come your way.
Yeah.
To build wealth. You don't see the opportunities to save. You don't see the opportunities to get a better job, to start your side hustle, you don't see any of those opportunities because you're so focused on how terrible money is. And money is not anything, it's a tool. It doesn't make you good, doesn't make you evil, doesn't make you kind, doesn't make you hideous. It's a tool, and it either amplifies who you are. If you're a good person, you're a great person with money. If you're an evil person, you're a worse person with money. It's a tool, right? It's like a knife. You use it to cut up your meat or you cut off your hand. So it's just really shifting from that limited mindset. When you're demonizing people who have money, you're wasting your time, because at the end of the day, they still got money. Whether or not you whether or not you demonize them. And you know what you can do when you have money, right? All the things that you hate, you can be part of the change. You can give back to your family. You can give back to your community. You can use your dollars to push your own ideas and your own agendas based on what you think is right, based on the impact you want to have. Money gives you options to make change, right? And a lot of people who demonize finances want to see change in different ways. But how, you know, if you hate it so much, how are you going to make the change when you do have it? So money's not bad, you know. And also, if I gave anybody who demonizes money $1 million right now, they're not going to turn it away. I mean, I will take it. Give it to me.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, it's complex, but I would just say, like, don't get caught up in the whole limited mindset. Oh, I can't have what they have, you know, rich people because they're rich. Like, even the succession rage, remember the show everybody was going crazy about? The dad and his brother came from zero, nothing, and they built their incredible, crazy wealth. But then people demonized them for being billionaires.
Yep. Yeah, it's like a you lose. And I think in the end, it says a lot more about the people who are doing the demonizing than the person.
Yeah, I mean, the people who have the money are losing nothing. They're not losing. Listen, I would rather cry tears in surrounded by my billions and be demonized surrounded by my billions. Listen.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
Demonize me as much as you want.
That's right. Laughing all the way to the bank.
As long as I'm surrounded by my money.
Let me wipe my tears with $100.
I know. Throw it away.
Excuse me. Let me pull out a hundo.
Molly, some people are going to be so mad at you for this.
I love it.
You're causing trouble.
No, I love this because I think this is an important conversation because I think it is important to call out the things that have begun to sneak their way into society, but really into our minds. And I love the way you talked about it. It's really a mindset issue.
Yeah.
It is all in how we view it and how we choose to, because it is a choice at the end of the day. Like, that is a choice.
Yep, it is a choice. I come from a background of a lot of poverty. Both of my parents are first generation everything, grade school, high school, college. My dad started grade one, the first grade, at 13 years old. Hmm. I don't take where I come from for granted, right? And so when people say, oh, you are this person, you've done this, and it's because you're lucky, there's no. I also don't know how much I believe in luck. I believe in God's favor. I believe in God's grace. I don't know what luck means, but that's just me.
No, I agree.
I can't believe in those two things and say, oh, this just happened by chance. As a child of God, nothing is by chance. It's by his design. So I don't know. Everybody has their own opinion about this, but I just think ultimately we all need to shift away from limited mindsets. Forget about what Elon Musk is doing. Okay.
Yeah.
He's not thinking about me.
He actually does not care about me.
Okay.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
And even if I buy his Tesla, he doesn't give a damn about me.
No. Do you think he knows the people that have bought his Teslas? No. This is okay. One more quick digression. This is what I do on. Okay. So I was inside a mall recently. Which never happens. I'm never like inside a mall, but for some reason I had to go and like, I had to return something in a store that I had bought online. I don't know, whatever. For whatever reason, I was in the mall and it was the first time in years that I had stepped foot inside a mall. And the mall near me, I kid you not, Bola, has a kiosk where you can purchase a Tesla. And I watched this woman walk up to this kiosk.
Wait, a kiosk?
A kiosk.
Like a little square thing?
A kiosk. It was not a store. There was just a car in the middle of the mall. And then a kiosk. A Tesla sign. It was a Tesla car. And then there's a kiosk. And a Tesla salesman. And this bro, I stood there. People watched. I was so creepy for probably like 15, 20 minutes. And I kid you not, I watched this woman walk up to this kiosk, have a 10-minute conversation with this Tesla sales guy, and she straight up impulse bought a Tesla. I was like, how did this woman just impulse buy a like $80,000 to $100,000 car without driving it? Like, she didn't test drive it. She just bought a Tesla from a kiosk. Do you think that Elon Musk is sitting there in his million bajillion dollar house or whatever, and he's like, oh, look, Carol from Durham, North Carolina just bought a Tesla from my kiosk in South Point Mall. Like, what? No.
Let me write her a thank you note.
What? Oh, my gosh. But she now in like 8 to 10 weeks or whenever her Tesla will be delivered will be like, why did I impulse buy this $100,000 car? But there was, you know, 0% financing right now, Bola.
I want to know about that marketing.
It was wild.
I want to read the book on that marketing. I don't care about Carol from North Carolina.
I genuinely, I don't know if her name was Carol. I'm just kidding. She looked like a Carol. I genuinely was like standing there and I couldn't believe my eyes. And I was like, okay, I mean, if that's what you want to do, I just have a lot of questions. I can't personally ever imagine spending that much on a car, period. But not test driving it and just like impulse buying a car like that in the middle of a mall.
Each to their own.
Each to
the
their own.
The kind of glory shown out on that kiosk.
So we impulse buy Little Debbie Christmas tree cakes. Carol impulse buys $100,000 Teslas.
You know what? If you like it, I love it.
Okay. But I actually really love this conversation because I do, again, I really find it to be helpful and I think important to how we make, how we have our own mindset around our own finances too. And I love the way that you approach how it's like, it's not a, if person over here has money, they're not taking away from what is my money. Like it's, you know what I mean? Like it's, it, the pie is big enough for all
I
of
mean,
us.
I mean, there are some people like that, that are.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But should clarify. Know,
yes.
You mean, I mean, in a general sense.
Yes.
In a general
yes.
Sense. Yeah.
Worry about what you can control. Worry about what you can do to make change in your life. And then, you know, as you move forward, you help others along the way. And, it, you know, you pay it forward and it comes back to you. That's what I believe. I'm not worried about how somebody else is making their money unless I'm learning from them. I'm not competing with anybody. There's enough room for us all to succeed. And that's, you know, be intentional. For everybody that says, every person that says, oh, I cannot build wealth because of XYZ, you can find an example of someone who has come from a worse situation than you that has made it work for themselves. Yeah. So don't get caught up in the, you know, like, it's again, limited mindsets. Like you want to, because when you're in that limited space, you don't see the opportunities. You don't see things that can help you because you're just so focused on that lack and what you don't have and who is doing what to you. Forget about all that and just be more open-minded and see, okay, what can I learn? What can I leverage? You may not be able to relate to my story 100% of the time. You may only relate to 1%. Throw away the 99% and then take that 1% and apply it to making your, helping yourself do better. That same way, that's what I do. I listen to podcasts, read articles about successful people. We come from different backgrounds. I don't relate to everything that they do. I don't relate to most things that they have going on. But you know what? I take what I, what's meaningful to me and the rest is whatever. And I, that's what I do. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I love how you encourage people. And I really, really love that, how you, you come at it from a place of genuine care for people and where, and their own unique situations and not shame or just all talking about how we're all on a journey. We're all learning. We're all going to make mistakes. And believing, having that mindset of believing in prosperity and wealth for all of us, and that this isn't just like a for some and not for others. And I love how you have stewarded not just your finances but also your platform well, in elevating the voices of women and filling a space that has been really lacking, and like you said, a kind of bro culture for a while, you know. And I'm always so encouraged when I come across women who are doing that. And I say this as the wife of a financial advisor, but even he admits, and you know, he finds it really funny and interesting too, because, like, you know, I'll travel with him to conferences sometime, and of course it is majority men. But you know, there are some women, the culture of women have really, grown in the last few years, at the conferences that he's at. And it's, you know, it's really, really good to listen to and hear from those women and their perspectives and in the industry. But two, you know, one of the things, and this is like a whole nother conversation, is just, it's really interesting how, like, especially in the kind of, you know, wealth management, financial advisor space, you know, how many advisors over the years are all kind of, they're all baby boomers, but so many of them are retiring now, and how there is actually a severe lack of advisors that are like 45 and under. There's just a very, very, a big gap, of lack of kind of that next generation of advisors. Like, even my husband kind of just like, there's not a whole lot of guys around his age in the industry, let alone women. So that's kind of an interesting just shift to see, like, as the culture of the financial space has really been heavily dominated by older men for a very long time.
Not just even finance, in capital, in the business world in general.
Yeah.
Even hair care products for women.
Yeah. Yeah. For women. Oh, four women. Yes. Well, Bola, I love you so much. You are just such a delight. For people that want to connect with you and listen to your podcast and all of the things, how can they connect with you? Where can they buy your books? Obviously, Target, all the things. Plug yes. away.
So you can find everything at clevergirlfinance.com. We have over 30 plus completely free courses. We have over 40 plus completely free worksheets. We have a whole library of free resources. The books are everywhere. Books are sold as ebooks, audiobooks, physical books. We have a podcast called The Clever Girls Know Podcast. And then we're on social media, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, at Clever Girl Finance.
Awesome. Bola, this is such a delight. You look great in your imaginary velvet.
I know, my velvet green.
You look lush. So good. It's so lush.
Should have worn red lipstick to match it.
Yes. 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 I love it. High end. High end. thanks for being here. Thanks for making me laugh. And thanks for encouraging me and being willing to just talk all things finance and mindset. And so good.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you loved this conversation with Bola. She is just amazing, so brilliant, so smart. We had such a great conversation. Go check out her stuff. I will have all of her links in the show notes. And let us know what you liked about this episode on social media. You can find me at Still Being Molly or at Can I Laugh Pod, wherever you get your social medias. And would you take a moment to head on over to whatever platform you are listening to this on and click the follow, subscribe, one of those buttons, and take a moment to leave a review of the show. Let us know what you're liking and how the show is impacting you. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for your support. Thank you to the team at Third Wheel Media. And for you, I hope something this week makes you laugh till you cry. We'll see you next week. Bye.